And here we are, jumping right into episode 17 of the One Fine Dynasty League podcast. We got all three cohorts here, Eric Thompson, Mike Such, and myself, the commissioner, Avery France. We're going to jump right into the games here. First one up, I'm going to go ahead and tackle mine. It was the Spencer Strassmore's Clients against the Ninja Assassins. Final score, 112-107. Quite a barn burner. My team gets the win, bringing us up to 5-3. Chu takes the loss, going down to 6-2. Both teams were pretty matched evenly. They well outperformed their predicted scores of around 83-ish. I'd say, for me, seeing it personally, Ninja Assassins had the commanding lead for most of Sunday, and then late on Sunday night, the comeback started in that New Orleans game. And finally, we were about 4 points apart going into Monday night, and the difference was James White's TD versus Gordon Edelman. And Gordon had a possible missed TD there that could have made the difference. And I guess for sad notes and sad songs, I've lost Will Fuller for the year. So it was an exciting game. I'm glad to get off the schneid, but I will defer to your insight, guys, to see what you thought of this game.
Yeah, two obvious teams that have a ton of points to put up. You guys both made moves, last week that I think to dramatically increase your roster. I think this game really came down to one guy on Chu's side, which was T.Y. Hilton. I think if anybody asked. That if I asked you, hey, Indy put up 42 points, how many touchdowns did T.Y. Hilton have? I have to guess you'd say one or two. For him to put up 1 point is, I think, the surprise from that roster.
Well, it certainly is the surprise, and one of the things that I did kind of in the solo show that I did there, one of the things that I did say was that Gordon is not, his floor is too low. And he would have to rely on a touchdown to really be able to make an impact on the overall outcome of this game. And then it kind of came to fruition. Overall, when it comes down to, it's a good game when it comes down to one touchdown going to one of the other two teams, one of the two teams, to really determine who's going to become the winner of the week.
No, I would agree. It's kind of funny, seeing Adrian Peterson blow up the way he did. That sort of offset the T.Y. Hilton. But I'd say it was fun because everybody was putting up touchdowns, and these are the games that I like. I'd much prefer this game. I mean, I liked it more because I won, but then the old, 47-41 type game.
Well, I couldn't imagine why you would like it because you won. I mean, of course you loved it. One of the interesting things to me going forward, especially for Avery's team, is going to be the Aaron Jones play. I mean, we just had the trade deadline today. We saw that T.Y. Hilton got moved. Clinton Dix got moved. A couple of guys, Golden Tate. We'll get into that for Mike's team and my team because that has ripple effects for Aguilar and for Galladay. But for Aaron Jones going forward, it's going to be interesting. I don't think that his workload necessarily increases, but I think that his floor comes up.
I would definitely agree. Those trades made me happy today. One from fantasy football on the fact of having Aaron Jones getting, I guess he'll be the starter and get a lot more touches going forward, and you don't have those three backs there. And then just simply jumping outside of fantasy football, I was happy to see Clinton Dix come over to the Redskins to shore up the, their backfield there on defense. It was a pretty good play.
That Montgomery trade is interesting for Chu's team too, because he is sitting on the two-headed Baltimore running back monster on his bench this week. But that is a wild card that goes into play. Are either of those guys serviceable? Does he, does Montgomery parrot too many carries or gets the third down back play instead? So it'll be kind of interesting to follow how that goes too.
I would say that probably Javoris Allen is the one that's going to suffer. Buck Allen is going to want to be the one that suffers the most in Baltimore. I don't think that Ty Montgomery comes in and really takes over Collins' play. Collins seems to fit the mold like Jamal Williams, where he's the between the tackles banger. Buck Allen is the one that's the receiving back, and Ty Montgomery fits that role a little bit more precisely, in my mind anyway.
No, I think you make fair points. It sort of puts Baltimore in that same situation Green Bay was in. So it's not good for Chu. But we're going to move it on to the next game, which was a marital showdown between the Nahant Narwhals and the Smashing Neurons. I don't know how it was. Did you guys, were you able to watch any of the games together while this was going on, or was she too busy?
No, we Actually, I was busy. We watched them early games, but then I had to get our plane actually for work. So unfortunately, I was not with her to rub it in her face, which probably worked out better for me in the long run, if I'm being honest. But yeah, no, it was
saved you from yourself, man.
A little bit, yeah, probably. you know, it was. I mean, she has hit a couple games in a row where her team's a little bit underperformed and still put up pretty decent numbers. You know, and I found a running back in Mac in Indianapolis. So
boy, did you.
You know, we'll see how that goes.
Well, that was my biggest takeaway on this was that Stash really looks like it's now going to be the second half, you know, an amazing player for you. I mean, I don't think you can expect 22 every week, but from everything I'm hearing is the gelling of the line out there in Indianapolis is definitely coming to the forefront, and he looks like he could jump right in there as a low-end running back one, you know, as his ceiling. I'd say if I were in your shoes also, seeing Watson have a game like last year must have been nice.
Yeah, I think Watson, I mean, if he gets a little bit of rest and he gets, you know, out with, especially with the trades that were made today to shore up that wide receiving core, I mean, I think you've started to see Watson look more and more like the guy we saw last year. He finally looks like he's, you know, recovered from the injury from last year, maybe not completely from the injury that he, you know, sustained a couple weeks ago. But that hasn't affected him as much as obviously, you know, the way he was hampered previously. So I think it has obviously looked like a different offense with him looking good.
Yeah. And then, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then the flip side to that is, you know, again, with the trade deadline, Samarius Thomas for Kelly being flipped, like Mike mentioned, I'm curious to see how much being the clear cut number two there with Deshaun Watson in an offense that will probably feature him in an exact number two role, which is probably fitting for his talent set right now, as to whether or not that would actually come to fruition, especially with Tyreek Hill coming up with that groin injury that could sideline him for a couple of weeks there.
Yeah, that's the two things I was going to mention, you know, that trade, how that's going to really, I think, help Watson, because I saw some stat and I can't recite it verbatim, but the paraphrasing it is Watson with Fuller versus Watson without Fuller are a big difference in statistics. And while we all know Thomas isn't the burner that's going to go, you know, and basically take the top off of defenses, Thomas is definitely a good possession receiver, and he can still catch some bombs. So I think this is only going to help with the floor of Deshaun Watson. So it's good, I guess, for both of you. It must have been tough, you know, with having Hill and Clement and Duke Johnson and Thomas and having them, you know, combine for such a low amount. And then I'll say to you, regarding Saquon Barkley, remember what I told you about that Redskins run D? I mean, he only racked up maybe like 38 on the ground. And I mean, the good thing was he was able to get a bunch of dump passes, had 111 overall yards, but the 10 points for Saquon Barkley was his low watermark of the year. So it's, I think that was just, you know, bad lineup, bad scheduling that kind of hurt her on that one.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I mean, it's scheduling always has an effect. Your bye weeks obviously have an effect. You know, so that obvious that had, you know, some influence there. Williams has looked really good for the Chargers. She wasn't able to put him in and had to deal with, you know, the Clement / Duke Johnson underperforming. Duke Johnson has kind of been a casualty of the Hugh Jackson, Todd Haley struggle. So we'll see what happens with him. I mean, literally, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen next week with Johnson from an offensive standpoint. So, I mean, either you know, you'll see a lot of these players, their values skyrocket, or you'll see them, you know, stay where they are or go a little bit the other way. I mean, I think that her team is kind of the biggest influx based on the trade deadline and the firings that have happened.
Yeah, I would be, you know, hitting on that Duke Johnson thing. There's two things that come to mind. And of course, you're the resident Browns fan, so it'd be interesting to see. The new OC was a guy that comes with a lot of pedigree, basically being a part of teams that have had offensive success through New England and Arizona with he was the quarterback's coach for what's his name down there, Carson Palmer. But then also the dead cat bounce. You know, I'm curious as to whether or not that's going to happen. And with Johnson kind of filling and fitting the role that Philip Lindsay had last week, I don't know if you guys saw the game, but Lindsay just ripped Kansas City, and he kind of has the same skill set.
Well, you know, it's funny if you watch the game, it's 2 weeks in a row they've gotten the ball into Dujanson's hands almost immediately. He was a screen, juked TJ Watt out of his shoes and ran for 10 yards, and then they rewarded him by giving him three more touches for the rest of the game. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, and that's happened multiple times. I just think, you know, he was a casualty of two guys trying to run their agenda. Neither one, you know, I read a funny stat that was pretty accurate, I think, and it's Hugh Jackson's agenda was not to develop players, it was to not get fired, and Todd yeah. Haley's agenda was to not do anything that Hugh Jackson said and to prove that Hugh Jackson was an idiot.
That right, so that he could agendas. Get the job.
That was the agenda. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, when you're being pushed and pulled from two very different, you know, coordinators essentially, and those both guys, I mean, it's not a surprise that the game scripting sucked, that the halftime adjustments didn't look like they did anything on offense, because you got two guys coming up with ideas and then neither one of them doing them. So
right. And yeah. One other question I had for go ahead, Mike Avery.
Oh no, I was gonna say is we've already seen track history with Duke Johnson, so I mean he can do a lot out there. I mean, he was the quintessential receiving back, but still was a good runner, so they're totally minimizing him, and it's sort of humorous. Well, I'm not a Browns fan, but it's humorous in the respect that you saw everything play out through Hard Knocks, and now it's come to fruition that everything we saw wasn't a show. I mean, they really despised each other, and you know, Hugh Jackson was as much of an idiot as we all thought, and so were the coordinators.
I don't think it would surprise anybody that what happened. The Haley's firing was more surprising, but the dysfunction between the two should surprise literally no one that's on HBO during training camps. Mm. You know, the biggest thing for me that I think is funny, and I think it's pretty obvious, is the guy that has to tell you he's the head coach, probably not a guy that's useful.
Yeah, declaring you're the leader is not
Avery, true leadership. Stop talking. I run this show.
I
am.
I mean, that's kind of the way it played out, right? I mean, basically.
Yeah. It was. It totally was. So we're going to toss it over to you, Eric, for the West Danes Curb game.
Yeah, so in this game, if I remember correctly, I did say West Staines was going to come out on top. I don't remember, the sours kicked in after a while. But Maker's Mark, so good. So we had the West Staines Massive with a 64-60 lead, win over the Curb Stompers. Dropped the Curb Stompers to 3-5. West Staines planed off at 4-4 with a .500 record. Really not a whole lot here as far as fireworks outside of Marvin Jones and Joe Mixon. That's really the two big firecrackers that went off for both sides. They basically negated each other, at which point it was a matter of who would suck less. And in this case, it was West Staines. So,
you know, I have issue. I was texting with Logan and I said, dude, you know, you do have a team on bye that you're starting there in the DST. He said, I don't want to waste $5. And I mean, I know he's 3-4 at the time, but so I did a quick look. I mean, you had free agents, Bengals, who scored 18, Saints, who scored 14, mm-hmm. Seahawks, who scored 9, 49ers, who scored 9, and Packers, who scored 5. All of those could have, you know, won the game right there. So I was kind of disappointed in that, but I guess he's, you know, playing for draft picks. But on the other side, I was looking at, you brought up Mixon. I mean, Mixon looks like a great asset for him. You think he could play some, you know, chess instead of checkers and move Mixon to get a lot more capital? Or is he just going to stick with Mixon and carry on and just try to fill in the gaps?
I think that he should probably look at the pieces that he has that do have value, like Johnson and like Mixon. Or not Mixon, but, you know, let's look at what can we get for those value players. And I have to say, if you're in a league where $5 seems like a lot to make a move, maybe not in the right league. Just going to throw that out there. Because I completely agree with you. I mean, there are multiple defenses out there to pick up. I mean, we're not talking about, like, defense, I think, is a very different position. If for some reason he had no wide receiver and he has to start a wide receiver, okay, it is harder to go and find a wide receiver that's actually going to put up points. Mm-hmm. You're going to get 1 point off the waiver wire. You're going to get 2 points off the waiver wire. Defense, you're going to get 6 or 7 if you just play the stream the defense game and pick up a different defense every week. I mean, it's not that complicated from that perspective. So that'd be my one issue there.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to, you know, you guys can talk about that, and I'll leave that to you guys to discuss. The other point that Avery brought up was about the potential trade capital that he has. I don't know that he's necessarily ready to move anybody. His roster is kind of in a interesting spot in that he has some core guys that he can definitely work with and move forward with, but then he also has guys that could bring in. I mean, and I'm sure we'll hit it towards the end of the show. But you know, we saw with Mud Monkeys the amount of equity that they were able to acquire with some frontline legitimate players and starters from teams that are trying to solidify their position in the playoff hunt. I think that it's one of those things that he should definitely take a look at, but it's he's not in a complete sell mode yet. So the next game we got on the docket was I've Got the Nuts and Miller High Life. And this one, was it a surprise to anyone? Kind of played out like we expected, with the only exception being the fact that I've Got the Nuts went as big as they did. We knew that they were going to score 90 points. It was just whether or not they were going to score 120, and apparently they did.
Well, that extra 15 points by that Sunday morning pickup of Derek Carr also helped. You know, without that, I could have had the extra 50 bucks, but now they got the third week of the year of them being the high score.
Yeah, I don't trust it. He should probably sell.
I mean, they are out of control. I mean, the fast track to the number one seed, and they've been so close. So I know that he's smelling the finish line here, but there's a long way to go.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing with his roster is that Drake has finally started to show up. They've actually started to utilize him. Miami has going forward. So whether if that kind of usage continues, then his small weakness of a running back hole or that roster hole, because we play with a kind of a flex position, basically, it has suddenly become a solidified position and one that has a very high floor. You know, the days where you can have Alshon Jeffrey score 3 points and Kittle with four and it not kill you or at least hamper you some are kind of out the window for him.
Yeah, you know, that guy Connor, he's good. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who was down on him.
Such.
I had him on my team last year, literally, on the practice squad, and ran out of space for him. So yeah. I believe I drafted him originally in the rookie draft. We could go back and check the tape.
Yeah, that's fine.
On the flip side, though, I think the one interesting thing with Miller High Life is he's so set up to sell. I mean, he's at a 2-6 record. He's got a ton of pieces that you have to think people want that have higher years attached to them. You know, if you're in the Fournette business, considering the situation, you probably should be in the Hyde business. You know, if you are looking for a wide receiver, you probably should look at Fitzgerald, who, man, that's a weird offense, but that's a guy that you can fill in. If he's your best wide receiver on your team, you're probably not doing anything. If he's the last guy that you're putting in your roster, that's a good fit. I mean, this is a guy that should maybe do the exact what you said about the Mud Monkeys, where they just flip the entire roster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Fitzgerald's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, you look at what happened with McCoy. McCoy gets fired. You had, of all people, what's his name?
Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, Byron Leftwich. Okay. Thank you. Good Lord, I drew a blank there.
Easy there.
Of all people, you had Byron Leftwich come in. You know, gonna run the Marshall offense. The you know, Byron Leftwich come in there and actually pick up where Bruce Arians left off, and so you started to see David Johnson have a little bit of utility to him. But what you really saw was Fitzgerald come back to the forefront. I mean, 17 points every week, no, but
now yeah, but he's actually healthy too. He has been injured for almost the whole season.
I think the big difference is with Byron Leftwich, that's a guy that doesn't care about going out there and playing for his job, quote unquote, in the coordinator position, because look, he's had a history in the league. So either he's going to get the role or he's not. So he's just out there saying, like, send the kid out there and let him go sling it. See what happens.
But it's a scheme thing too. It's an approach and a scheme thing.
Well, you got to get back to basics. I mean, without being too cliched, you have David Johnson, you have Fitzgerald. I mean, use them. I mean, I think they're trying to get too cute. I know that they have Kirk and whatnot, but they need to keep it simple and then build from there instead of trying to do anything extravagant. So right. I think that's where he's going to start from.
Yeah, it's the way that they were using David Johnson, though. I mean, David Johnson was basically running in the A-gap the whole year. And David Johnson's not that kind of running back. He's not the beast. He's not beast mode Marshawn Lynch. He's a guy where you have to, like Gurley, like Melvin Gordon, like Le'Veon Bell, like James Conner, you have to get him in space, create a situation where there's an opening that they can go and utilize all of that space and make people miss. That's what David Johnson did, and that's why you had that 2,000-yard from scrimmage season with 20 touchdowns. That's what he did. They kept throwing the ball. He had, what, 80 receptions that year?
Yeah, I mean, they split him out. They use him sort of as an H-back at times. You put him in motion. You just, you know, line him up in every offensive skill position almost, and that's the difference of how Johnson was used instead of, you know, your typical I formation and run up the ass of some offensive lineman.
I mean, for the league, I mean, he's a guy with some years attached to him, so it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if he's able to make a package there, what kind of deals he can do, if he decides to sit on him and, you know, go with a heavier lineup for next year. But he definitely has some pieces he can move if he wants to.
Yeah, and now that the seal's been broken, it's going to be a rush because it's on both sides, because now that teams have already leveraged, now the people who are coming later to the table to sell might not get as much in return. So it'll be interesting how the economics will work going forward.
And we're getting close. I mean, we've kind of hit that threshold where teams know one way or the other. I mean, if you look at the next game, you know, the Bismarck Shuttlecocks versus Emperor John, this is two teams that, you know, I mean, Eric, I don't know, but if you lose to John, are you, I mean, I have to put you in the seller camp at that point, right? I mean, now you're back in it, you're 4-4, you know, you have a good shot at it. How nervous were you at this at some point during this game, though? Because I think John and you were pretty close for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, even going into with the way that the first half with the Green Bay and Rams game kicked off, that was the one that was like, ooh, okay, that put me in the hot seat, you know, knowing that he still had Thielen in his pocket who easily could put up 18 points at any given time. Even though I had Diggs, Diggs is a more risky play versus Thielen. So, I got pretty nervous for a while there.
Well, I think if I recall correctly, I mean, really going into the Monday night, you know, the Patriots D obviously put up 18 points, but there was a risk where if they went negative a little bit, you know, you could have been hit. And I know I actually did some Twitter checking right after the last play of the game in the Minnesota game where it looked to me like it was a Diggs fumble, you know, and the number of people that were posting pictures of NFL, is this a Diggs fumble? Because I lose my game or I win my game with pitching the scoreboard and stuff. I mean, it was great. And they never even mentioned it in the broadcast. Nobody ever brought it up. There wasn't even a question. And it's like, yeah, well, there's lots of money involved at this point. You know, like for a league that makes them go out and trot out there and kick the extra point on a game-winning touchdown, maybe, you know, that's something we should at least pay attention to.
So it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, and obviously you know, because you and I texted back and forth like right at the end of the game and you said fumble, fumble. And I said, no. He was lateraling it. That's what he was doing.
Lateral is still a fumble, though.
That's technically, yes. And it probably should have been a fumble. That being said, in the vein of stat corrections, I was only a 3-point lead going into the Monday night game. At the end of the Sunday night game, when I woke up on Monday morning, it was Monday, maybe mid-morning, I looked at the score and I was a 5-point lead, and that was because the stat correction for the Panthers defense went from 10 to 8. And so, you know, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, take it away from Diggs, take it away from Panthers.
It's basically the equivalent of the actual NFL where you can never celebrate anything because you have to go to the 20-minute instant replay.
Yeah, exactly.
2 weeks in a row that happened to me where when I went to bed Sunday night, I woke up the next day and the team I was playing gained another 2 points. The week before, I actually lost 2 points, so I had a 4-point swing waking up. So I definitely know what you're talking about on that one. I almost lost a championship, I think, years ago because of that lateraling crap at the end of a Pittsburgh game. I think I had Williams when he was filling in for Bell, and they had one of those like, just don't pitch it, don't.
I won one, same thing, but the opposite side of things where I had the defense in play and lateral, and they had the recovery. Yeah, and I got the points and won it. Yeah, but I don't think this game, I mean, as much as it was, you know, much closer than it probably should have been, you know, I don't know that anybody really had too much of a doubt, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much John can play spoiler going forward on some of these teams, or, you know, if he wants to move a few of these pieces. You know, he has some guys that have some value that maybe
he's not going to. This was my final point that I see. This is the same thing after his championship year. This is what we see every year. He gets out in this big hole, and then he plays spoiler at the end because he doesn't want to move anything, and he has this pride, et cetera, et cetera. And it's fine. I mean, he always comes there, you know, just maybe a game under 500, two games at the worst. But the same thing's happening this year because what's his ceiling? His ceiling is 6-6-1.
He is 100% in the equivalent of, you know, where the NBA gets, where he's a 7 or 8 seed every year. Mm-hmm. You know, your team, you're never bottoming out and setting yourself up for the long term, but you're never in the thick of it then either. So you just churn the middle, and maybe you make the playoffs, maybe you don't, but you're never quite, you know, getting anywhere with it. So, I mean, you probably should make a decision one way or the other. But, I mean, look, if that's his role and he wants to play spoiler, I mean, I'm not going to argue with him. You know, I'd like a few of his players, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, don't we all want a few of his players, especially that Minnesota wide receiver. The thing is, I mean, if he's going to be the spoiler, I mean, he kind of is a good spoiler. Look, I mean, he went out and he beat or tied Mud Monkeys when he had no business. He put a strong scare in me. And honestly, I mean, he could put up 80, 85 points with that offense.
And it's interesting. It's like, all right, look, if you don't want to sell, okay, that works. But let's look at the lot. Let's look at the schedule. Let's look at what you could get to. Maybe you should buy. Maybe you say screw it and throw it to the wind and sell out next year to try to get back into it and sell for guys that, you know, I mean, there are ways to remake your roster in this league. I think we've seen that very recently, you know. So,
well, all three of us have done it.
Well, but you make a good point. You got to go one way or the other, buy or sell. Doing the same thing over again and again, expecting a different result, was the definition of insanity. And that's what I see him doing. And I'm sorry, John, I'm not calling you crazy, but I'm saying I think it's time to try something different. You don't have to sell the farm, but like Mike's point is if you buy some pieces, even if you don't make the playoffs, now you got a new set of variables to play with next year. And it'll force you to think of more options rather than just having the static roster that you drop some players and then draft some to fill in the gaps. You know, it's time to try some different equations. I mean, it's just my opinion, but what do I know? I haven't won anything.
Yeah, that's true. There's only been 4 champions. The thing I will say is that, I mean, he has made a few small moves. He has. I mean, the one, it's one of those things where it's, and I'm not sticking up for the guy. I'm postulating here. I'm speculating. I wonder if it's a once bit, twice shy type situation. You know, he went out and he traded for Jordy Nelson. He traded Aguilar, which, yeah, honestly, it's kind of a wash trade, but it's a one that he made and one that has come back to bite him. He made another trade, I forget, where actually he made a trade with me last year where he got John Brown and Sterling Shepard, and that's played out very well for him. So, I mean, he usually makes 1 to 2 trades a year, if not 3, you know, because everybody does it right around the trade deadline or the, roster declaration deadline, but or contract year deadline. But it's not like he just sits there completely twiddling his thumbs, to be fair.
You're right. I just think that now's the time to make a decision. Now's the time to do something a little bit different. And that's just one man's opinion. But we beat that, you know, horse in the ground. So why don't you jump on over to those sellers, huh? The Mud Monkeys.
So that leads us to the next one. Battle between two teams that are kind of reshaping their teams, I think, going into this. So you've got Greenlight Fabrizas. They're now 3-5. They lose to the newly refined Mud Monkeys, who put up 83 points after making an entire change to the roster. Is anybody the same as who they had last week? Maybe LeSean McCoy?
Boyd.
Boyd, okay.
Cam Newton.
Yeah, but for the whole, though, I mean, they made a lot of moves. They set themselves up for next year, and they still put up 83 points.
Yeah.
I'm going to laugh when they get in on the 6th seed.
Agreed.
Because I think, look at this, they do score 83. Obviously, they had some really big games, but on the other hand, I was in the camp, and I told you guys outside of our podcast, is I thought they had, you know, outside of I Got the Nuts, one of the highest potentials for going all the way this year. So I was surprised to see what they did, and I want to try to find out.
I also think it'll be the funniest thing ever when they get in based on having two ties, and that's what puts them over the edge.
Oh, that's true. They hated that tie, which, you know, if you guys are listening, that sort of made me laugh when you got so mad about the tie.
Well, look, I mean, we've seen it the last 2 years. We saw it with Kelly. We saw it with Avery. We saw it, with me the year before, where, you know, you don't outright sell everything to completely lose the whole year, but you kind of tank a little bit so that you have a better chance to get a top three pick.
Are we sure Avery didn't do that? Because I distinctly remember him picking up players that were fifth string and putting in.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm totally guilty of that way of trying. And your wife still beat me to that number one.
yeah, which is interesting. I mean, and she did it the right way, right? If you're going to do anything, do it right.
Yeah, well, I feel guilty. So let's move forward.
But to make the point, it's going to be interesting. This is what his third win. He's got two ties. He's pretty much a lock for like the fourth or fifth seed at this point. He did make trades, but those trades for those number one seeds are going to be probably the 10th through 12th pick, somewhere around in there. So how, other than dumping a bunch of years and getting some number two wide receivers and a number two running back with some high side, I concede high side in Ridley and Mike Williams. I think Mike was right. Maybe they should have bought and moved forward.
I don't know that they're done. I mean, basically they took some high year guys that have a ton of years attached to them, but that are high end. You mean, no one will argue that Antonio Brown's not high end, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but they flipped them for guys that have much, much lower contracts and have, you know, the same kind of upside as the majority of the players that they got rid of. And let's take Antonio Brown out of the equation. But I mean, they reshaped their roster in a way that all of the players that they have do have a ton of upside going forward. I mean, Ridley has the possibility, and maybe it won't be this year, but at some point, we've seen it in Atlanta in the past. At some point, Roddy White was the star. Julio Jones was the number two, the young guy, and at some point they flipped because it hit a certain threshold. And I'm not saying we're there yet, but how many touchdowns does Ridley have? We're not that far off from that. So, I mean, they're setting themselves up long-term, and I think they're doing it the right way, but I don't think they're done. I think that they have more moves to make.
I know you're dying to talk about, you know, your Falcons, but what I would say regarding the picks at the end of the first round, you know, it'd be somewhere in the 8 to 12 range, but at the same time, since they already have their pick, I mean, they could double things up and move even further up in the first round. So
Certainly. They
have more capital, basically. So they got more to work with. So it doesn't really matter in that respect that it's at the end. That's just only if they stayed static.
I solely bring it up as a talking point to be able to continue the conversation. And it lends to what you were talking about, Avery, going forward with John. And it's a situation where you take $1, you turn it into $3. You take $3, you turn it into $9. You have more flexibility to do more things with when you take one piece and you turn it into $3. And that's kind of what the Mud Monkeys have done. I agree with you. It's interesting, is all I'm saying, is that
you're right. But I'd say that's
you. Yeah, but as much as you say about like the end of the round, first round picks, I mean, let's look at what that produced this year. Adrian Peterson went 9. I mean, that's a guy that's honestly been a stud this year. You know, Greg Olsen, who got hurt, went 10th. Alshon Jeffrey, who's put up sizable points in weekly occasions, has went 11th. Their own Cam Newton, who put up, what, 20 plus this week. Tariq Cohen went up in the second round. Andrew Luck. I mean, the guys that went first round, James White would have been available there. You know, I mean, so there's a lot of players that have made an impact on the league this year at a sizable place. So, I mean, I can't fault them for going after first round picks that are late in the first round. I think that there's definitely value there regardless. And it does give you more buying power for other pieces.
Plus, we are going to be going into year 6 and the contracts are just going up another year. So there's a trickle down effect of what talent's going to be available in the first round. So in previous years, in the first few picks, you know, that's where sort of the line would cut off and where the talent was. But I think in year 6, we'll see even deeper talent in the first round than we've seen before, only to back what you're saying. And what you were saying, Eric, what I'd like to sort of dub that is the scalper's mentality. You know, you go out there and you have this low-end Bob Uecker seat and you flip that and you keep flipping it. And the next thing you know, you got box seats after, you know, an entire morning of working.
That's a good point, Avery. I mean, I think that next year, who knows what kind of talent will be available in the first round. That being said, I will offer you my first round pick for Alvin Kamara right now. I mean, you never know what that'll turn into.
All that being said, we don't want to be remiss and not say a word about this game, but it was a blowout. It was supposed to be, you know, Paul, you know, taking this game. He was favored by, I guess, about 8 points. But, you know, that Ty Montgomery -2 didn't help. Ben Watson, which I've even, you know, he said on his interview he liked, you know, Ben Watson because of that connection with Breeze. As you like to say, Eric, the game script of that New Orleans didn't really lend itself well for Paul scoring with Drew Breeze. That Philip Lindsay piece might be very good going forward. Kearse didn't come through as we were thinking that he would. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of odd. I just say right now, neon lights, and I'll throw it back to you guys, neon lights. Paul, you got to do it now. I mean, it's the time's ticking. You got to go in, go out.
Yeah, one way or the other, I completely agree with you. I think Lindsay's an interesting piece because, with the trades that the Broncos made, the Broncos are slightly going into tank mode, I think, for the year. You know, I don't think they didn't make moves to make their team better. They made moves to sell contracts at the trade deadline. So, you know, every piece that goes away that's a valuable outside target makes it harder for, you know, Lindsay and for Freeman because now they're facing 8-man boxes more and more often. DeSean Jackson, who the hell knows who's going to throw him the ball on week-to-week basis. AJ Green, I mean, that offense is a question mark. I hope that Hugh Jackson somehow lands there as like a quarterback's coach or something, because that will cripple that offense. It'd be great. I don't know what's going on with his team across the board. Ty Montgomery getting traded. There's nobody on his roster that you could point to and say, no, that guy's got no issues. Oh, no, I take that back. Drew Brees. Drew Brees has no issues, except for the fact that in our current situation, he's got way too many years attached to him for Paul's liking at 3-5.
I also heard some stuff, you know, regarding Drew Brees, and they're showing some past years. But he might go through some segments because of the style of what New Orleans is playing, the defense picking it up, that you could have several of these weeks with a single touchdown and, just not enough points out of that position. So even though he has the name Drew Brees and we've talked about all of his accolades, his abilities and so forth, in the end, it's the bottom line. I mean, how many points are you putting up? And like you said, he's not even a guarantee going forward.
Well, I think you're right. I made a big deal about how Breeze is going to be winging the ball all over the place to start the beginning of the season and that it may continue into the season. But it has. It's reverted back. With Ingram coming back, as you well know, with Ingram coming back, that offense has reverted back to last year's style of play. Now, that being said, next week, they play the Rams. All bets are off.
Correct,
that's going to be
correct.
It's going to be a 58-52 game. Okay, that's going to be some kind of crazy, you know, shenanigans going on there. But that's going to be so much fun to watch. And you will probably, and it's Breeze at home in the dome. And where does Breeze wing that ball all over the place? At home in the dome. So he's going to get at least one, if not three, more games total out of him. Where he's going to put up big numbers, but is it going to be consistent enough and reliable enough? I think the floor is too low, especially for that many contract years for a guy that's trying to make the playoffs, that sort of thing. In green light, it's just the floor is too low with Breeze.
Yeah, he's 2.5 games back in his division, and you're looking around the league in terms of that. Those wild card spots. He's in a tough position because if you look at the wild cards, you got a couple teams at 5-3 that could be there. You got, 4-4 up there. And so 3-5 is, a bit back as well. So I don't know. To me, it's the time to sell, but, we'll see what Paul does. With that, we're going to bring this to a crashing halt, and we're going to have to get on a preview. I'd like to do it, guys, if we can, maybe on Thursday, because I got to travel this weekend, and then next week, I don't know what we're going to do while I'm on the road to try to make this all work, but, we got enough technical minds here. We'll figure something out. So thanks a lot for tuning in, and we'll be back on episode 18 for the week 9 previews. Goodbye.